From the KTO newsroom, I'm Ryan Cunningham. Alaska revenue officials shut down online applications for Alaska permanent fund checks after personal information of other users popped up on applicants' computer screens. The private information from other applicants included names, addresses, and Social Security numbers. The Alaska Department of Revenue shut down the application process Tuesday, the day it opened for 2019 checks. Revenue Commissioner Bruce Tangeman said Wednesday he is apologizing for the problem every chance he gets. As some Alaskans tried to apply Tuesday, the information boxes on their screens filled with data from previous applicants. It has not been determined whether the system experienced a glitch or a hack, and Tangeman did not want to speculate. He said an online counter indicated that fewer than 100 people had applied for dividends when the system was shut down. Tangeman is hoping the system will be back online in a few days. All three parties filed briefs and objections last Friday to a ruling on the lawsuit holding up Alaska's House District 1 election. 2 months after Election Day, the Alaska Supreme Court is scheduled to hear each party argue their points at a hearing of oral arguments this Friday morning, January 4th. In the meantime, the State House is at a standstill, unable to elect the Speaker until a majority is decided. KUAC's Robin reports.
The careful persnickety points each party argues can be fascinating or frustrating. Half the voters in this downtown Fairbanks district voted for each side. Remember, this race was certified as a tie between Democrat Catherine Dodge and Republican Bart Laban until the November 30th recount put Laban one vote ahead. Dodge filed a complaint to the Division of Elections on that day, challenging the way four ballots were counted. Laban's people, joined with the Alaska Republican Party, intervened shortly thereafter, challenging six ballots. And in a 6.5-hour hearing on December 20th, attorneys argued to Superior Court Judge Eric Arseth why the ballot should be counted differently. When it was over, Arseth let the count stand, saying new evidence could not be considered. The Division of Elections did the best it could with what was known at the time, and the state needs to move on.
The legislature has made the emphasis of a prompt decision, in my words, is more important than a perfection in terms of the election process itself.
Parties had 1 week to protest, and they did. Last Friday, Dodge, Laban, and the Division of Elections each filed briefs. Their basic arguments haven't changed, but the candidates' attorneys each found reasons Arseth's ruling is in error and want new evidence to be allowed. If Laban's people get their way, he would get three more votes and Dodge would get one fewer. The Dodge campaign thinks she would gain two votes and Laban would lose two if their arguments prevail. And the Division of Elections, now with a new administration, thinks the count should stay as it is. All three will argue their points in front of the Supreme Court on Friday morning. Each party gets 20 minutes starting at 9 a.m. Since the justices will have read everything before that, the time will mostly go to questions and answers. It's unlikely, but possible, for the justices to rule on the case that very day. The clock has been ticking down to the January 15th opening for the Alaska legislature, which would like to know which party is holding the seat for District 1. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
A new study has found that one of the coho salmon's most valuable senses may diminish as more carbon dioxide enters the North Pacific Ocean, threatening their ability to avoid predators, find their way back to their natal streams, and even their ability to find spawning mates. Chase Williams is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Washington. Williams worked on the study in conjunction with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Northwest Fisheries Science Center.
And so we did this study because over the past almost 10 years now, there's been a lot of research coming out of Australia on tropical reef fish and a couple other places in the world looking at the effects of elevated CO2 on fish behaviors.
In this particular study, Williams and his colleagues measured juvenile coho salmon's ability to detect predators by injecting ground-up salmon scales into tanks holding individual fish.
So normally when a fish's skin is lacerated, say by a predator munching down on a fish, there's a chemical cue or cues, no one's quite sure exactly what yet, but those odors are released in the water, and nearby fish of a similar species have a very strong avoidance reaction to it.
For 2 weeks prior to the test, different groups of juvenile coho were exposed to current CO2 levels in the Puget Sound, and estimated levels both 500 and 100 years from now. The study measured each fish's avoidance when scales were injected into their tanks, and coho that were exposed to higher levels of CO2 were increasingly indifferent to the smell.
And what we found was that the salmon are likely still smelling the odors, so there's no changes in the way their nose is detecting the odors, but We did pick up changes in the way that their brain was potentially processing those odor signals. And so that's what's likely driving the behavioral changes.
Williams hopes to conduct similar experiments on other salmon species, but he says this study is concerning for all salmon from the Pacific Northwest to Alaska, particularly for populations that are currently struggling. A new report by state public health officials shows an increase in the number of suicides across Alaska. Researchers also looked into the role of drugs and alcohol in such incidents, information they hope will give clinicians and behavioral health providers better data for treatment. Deborah Hole-Gilley is an epidemiologist with the state and says that during the five-year period under review, Alaska saw one of the highest rates of suicide nationwide.
We had a 13% increase in the rate.
According to the report, from 2012 to 2017, suicide was, quote, the leading cause of death among Alaskans from age 10 to 64 years old. The rates are highest in Western Alaska communities, but the largest upticks during the last few years were along parts of the rail belt. Anchorage and the Mat-Su region saw a 61% increase in the suicide rate over the previous five-year period. What the data does not explain is why the number of self-inflicted deaths in Alaska is climbing after several years of gradual declines. Hole-Gilley and other researchers with the state are beginning a 12-month project to try to answer that question. One major area of examination is substance abuse. The new state report was accompanied by a separate document outlining toxicology reports conducted after individuals killed themselves. Hole-Gilley says those tests only started in 2015, but 70% of the individuals tested positive for one or more substances, most commonly alcohol.
That is a question that we're going to have to answer is, are we seeing substance misuse impacting persons that are already at risk for self-harm?
Hole-Gilley says the more granular data on when and how drugs and alcohol contribute to suicides can help clinicians, behavioral health specialists, and therapy providers offer better treatment. She believes toxicology results can ultimately become a tool for prevention strategies.
We need to track those a little bit better so that we can understand how these drugs might be influencing people that are either contemplating self-harm or something is occurring in their life and it's a very impulsive act.
If you or someone you know is in crisis, you can talk to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or you can text 741-741. The new year is a time for looking ahead, and in Juneau, that goes for animal shelters, too. As of Tuesday, the Gastineau Humane Society has changed its name to Juneau Animal Rescue. They're also getting a new logo. This year marks 56 years for the organization. Director Samantha Blankenship said the change was prompted by a desire to make more people aware of their role in the community.
We're trying to look forward into our next 60 years of service, so we're looking to develop new supporters as well as embracing our longtime supporters. And we wanted an identity that was more closely aligned with our city and our mission of promoting animal welfare and the prevention of animal cruelty and suffering.
She said they also receive several calls a week from people looking for Gastineau Human Services, a nonprofit that provides transitional housing and support for formerly incarcerated and homeless individuals. In addition to pet adoption, Juneau Animal Rescue provides services like doggy daycare, grooming, and animal vaccinations. The City and Borough of Juneau contracts the organization to provide animal control and protection. But Blankenship says most of the organization's funding comes from donations.
With the old name of Gastineau Humane Society, a lot of people were under the misconception that we did get funding from larger humane societies, and that's not true. We're a private, nonprofit entity.
Blankenship says the shelter adopted out 343 animals last year. She says in recent years they've seen more owners giving up their pets. They're not sure why, but they hope to keep expanding services in the coming years. And finally tonight, the list of people signed up to deliver invocations to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly includes Christian pastors, atheists, and a member of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. The Anchorage Daily News reports nearly all the 20 spots for 2019 have been filled after a borough assembly adopted a new policy in November, allowing any borough resident to submit a written request to offer an invocation. You're listening to KTOO Juneau. This has been the top stories from KTOO Newsroom.